Jared and the GM on ESPN 102.5 The Game, online at thegamenashville.com. We are live today at Bridgestone Arena where the Preds take on the Vegas Golden Knights tonight at 6 o'clock. GM, how are you today?
Outstanding. It's a little bit of a change of pace. We come in here, it's actually warmer here than it is outside.
It is never like that, but everybody that's on the road today, stay safe. Everybody that's inside their homes listening to Jared and the GM, perhaps on the Game Nashville app, go ahead and get that app because everybody loves the app. Maybe they're listening to us on the app or at thegamenashville.com. We appreciate it. Floyd, we are on to day two of the coaching search.
Yes, sir.
So apparently this is how the year's going to go for us. I wasn't totally sure, but we went last year from the hockey playoff season to football season, and now we're to playoff season, and now to coaching search season. And then we'll go back to hockey playoff season once draft season is over with. Then we'll get to hockey playoff season. But here we are with coaching search day number two. So let's just get an update on what all we know about the Titans coaching search. And now we're done. Because quite frankly, I mean, I know that there's a lot of reports coming out about the different guys the Titans are looking at. But you know John Robinson as well as everybody. You know that the Titans are not going to let out there for sure who they're talking to or who they're interested in until it's done. Now, this is the real update. The Titans apparently are planning to interview Mike Vrabel, the defensive coordinator of the Houston Texans, right, according to reports. Steve Wilks, the defensive coordinator of the Carolina Panthers, per reports. Matt LaFleur, the offensive coordinator of the L.A. Rams, per source. And there's a couple other names that have been thrown in there. Frank Reich and Joe DeFlippolo or Filippilo or whatever it is. I don't know, whatever. The Eagles quarterback coach. Those guys are all mixed in. But the names that have gotten out for interviews, Mike Vrabel, Matt LaFleur, and Steve Wilks are the three names that we've heard about the Titans will interview coming up here in the near future. Of any of the stuff you've heard so far, is there anything that stood out to you about this Titans coaching search for an update for the people out there?
No, not really. I mean, it appears to me it's not a giant concern whether he's coaching offense or defense. They're looking at a young guy. And, the situation they're in now is if they want to talk to somebody that's on these remaining four teams, of course they can't and won't be able to till after, they're done playing. So, I mean, you don't – if your top two or three candidates are on those four teams, in reality, there's not much you can do. And so what do you do? Well, you just can't sit on your butt. So you start bringing in some guys that you might have interest in. And I'm not saying they may love all three. I don't know that. But they don't have any choice but to be bringing some guys in, and these guys are all kind of fitting a mold, if you will.
The other update just came from Jason Wolf of the Tennessean reporting that Dick LeBeau, if he is not asked to be retained by a new coaching staff, is comfortable retiring. Now, when I brought that up to you, you brought up an interesting point that even if Dick LeBeau wants to retire, it would be in the best interest financially for Dick LeBeau to try to stay on with a new coach. Then when they fire him, if, say, a new coach wants to come in and bring his own guy, then he can retire after they fire him technically, so Dick can collect the free money or whatever the buyout of his contract would be.
Right.
But I guess it sounds to me like Dick LeBeau's open to returning. That's the bigger thing in this, that maybe, like, let's say you hire an offensive guy like Matt LaFleur, a young offensive-minded coach. I think Matt LaFleur is like 38 years old. I mean, would it not be probably in the best interest to keep the 81-year-old defensive coordinator around just because you have the grizzled veteran coach who's been there, done that on one side of the ball, who knows how to coach these guys? It continues at least some continuity. When we hear that John Robinson wanted staff changes, it sounds like they were on the other side of the ball. They weren't Dick LeBeau. And so maybe it makes sense if you bring in Matt LaFleur or if you bring in an offensive coach to then keep Dick LeBeau on the other side of the ball.
Yeah, I mean, that wouldn't surprise me at all, especially if you bring in a young offensive guy like this who's, generally speaking, you've got a 35-year-old guy that's coaching the NFL on offense has probably never coached a snap of defense in any meaningful way. That is, a major college or a mid-major or NFL. So your knowledge of what goes on on defense is probably limited to, You know, if you're an offensive line coach, you're limited to line stunts. If you're a receiver, you're limited to coverages and people in coverage. So, you know, to have somebody that could come in and do that whole thing for you would probably be a giant plus.
Matt LaFleur's career as an NFL coach, offensive quality control with the Texans, quarterback coach with the Redskins, quarterback coach at Notre Dame for a year, quarterback coach with the Falcons for 2 years, and offensive coordinator with the Rams. So a whole lot of quarterback coaching in there, not a whole lot of anything else coaching. And that, I think, is at least a little bit of a concern, which kind of takes me to kind of the first big question I have today. And that is, in your mind, what do the Titans need in their next head coach? Like, what the thing that's, I don't want to say troubling, but it's, you know, we talked about with Philip Fulmer, he made it very clear what he was looking for in his head coach when he took over the Vols search, right? Because they were all three defensive coordinators with SEC ties.
All right.
So it was obvious that Phil Fulmer wanted an SEC coach who was a defensive guy. But here you've got Wilkes, who's a defensive coordinator, Vrabel, who's a defensive coordinator, but's only been a coordinator for 1 year, and then you've got LaFleur, who's an offensive coordinator and hasn't coached anything at the NFL level other than the quarterbacks. So they're kind of all over the place with what they're looking for. So I don't know what I make of that, but then I wonder, in your mind, what do the Titans need? Because we can throw out names, and people will call him, what about John Fox, and what about this coach, and what about that coach? And I don't want to do that today, but, I mean, just the qualities that they need. Outside of the typical, oh, a guy who's going to be a great leader of men and yada, other than that, what do they actually need on this football team?
Well, I mean, they're going to need somebody that can take the players that they already like here and be able to use them and use them effectively. And I think if you don't do that, then you're literally going to be starting all over. Because I think we already have an idea of areas on the offense and defense that we're going to have to work on in the offseason. Well, yeah, and you would right now, you would say, okay, running back, let's say. Running back, we're fine. We don't have to worry about it. Well, if you bring in an offensive coordinator that doesn't like our running backs, well, now you have to add running back to that search. And that example is true in virtually every position. So for you to bring in a guy that's not going to like big receivers, of which we have some of, or not going to like, you know, run-blocking offensive linemen or whatever the case may be, well, each time that happens with whoever comes in, that's a whole new area that you've got to go shopping for. And what happens is when you finally get to a point, your third year, where you're saying to yourself, okay, if we can just streamline this area, if we can punctuate this position, if we can do these three or four or five things, now we really are in a position to be able to contend. Well, if that is abbreviated by the fact that all of a sudden you're adding three new positions you have to go out and shop for, well, you know, you're taking a step back.
Well, then wouldn't the Rams offensive coordinator probably not be the – I mean, I don't know what he did in Atlanta, but let's – I mean, take Atlanta and the Rams, the two places that Matt LaFleur has been lately. Tevin Coleman, Devontae Freeman, Todd Gurley. You don't have that on the roster right now. And it's not like he's really the offensive coordinator of the Rams. I'm not trying to knock him, but Sean McVay is the offensive coordinator of the Rams. Sean McVay calls the plays. Sean McVay talks to the quarterback. Sean McVay is, in my mind, the offensive coordinator of the Rams. So I don't know if that means that would be a good fit or not. The thing that I don't like with the firing of Mike was, at least I felt like Mike was a good CEO coach. Mike was good at getting things organized. Mike was good at getting the players to believe. Mike was good at, you know, all the things that you see with bad teams, like what the Steelers did last week with all the talking about the Patriots and the complaining about contracts and stuff like that. Mike didn't have a problem with that. Like that, because that wasn't the culture that the Tennessee Titans have. And I like all that, and whoever comes in is going to have to continue that culture. So it can't be some boy wonder offensive coach that locks his door and doesn't ever talk to the players and doesn't, you know, do the things that essentially the last coach did, Ken Whisenhunt. And so that worries me. But then again, to your point, I mean, how many coaches are out there that will look at this offense and say, we don't need to make major changes to the personnel? Because I don't know the answer to that question.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know either. But I assume that anybody we talk to is going to be willing to say that, or else we're kind of spinning our wheels. You know, it's like we were saying yesterday, it's not going to do us any good with this offensive group to bring in a run-and-shoot guru. You know, he could be the best offensive mind in the world when it comes to the run-and-shoot, But we don't have run shoe people. So, I mean, he may know it all, but we're going to have to change the entire offense to where he'll be able to do anything.
Well, doesn't that then make you kind of want Matt LaFleur less? Because Matt LaFleur comes from the Atlanta Falcons and the L.A. Rams, and the Titans don't have the personnel of the Atlanta Falcons or the L.A. Rams?
Well, I mean, I think, you know, I'm just – this is off the top of my head. I mean, just because he's so young, he's probably very pliable. If you had a Dick LeBeau on offense, he would probably be pretty well set in his ways, you know. So I'm just guessing the reason you talk to somebody like that is because he would be willing to come in and adapt to pretty much whatever it is, you know, you want to adapt to.
And what do you think of the defensive coaches? Because yesterday when it came out that they were going to fire Mike Mularkey, everyone, you know, the national media who doesn't know anything about any of this stuff, all started saying, oh, Josh McDaniels. They got the relationship from New England. And now two of the names that have come out, Mike Vrabel, who Albert Breer says is the favorite, although I don't think they have a favorite right now, but Mike Vrabel and Steve Wilks are in the mix, and those are defensive guys.
Right.
So then you would almost – then the most critical hire becomes who's the offensive coordinator.
Exactly. I mean, and again, you don't know what's going to happen with Dick LeBeau, but – you know, if a defensive coach comes in, he's probably going to want to change a bunch of stuff. And, you know, Dick may not fit a bunch of those schemes. So all of a sudden, you know, maybe you've got an issue there. But you certainly would. If you come in and you're a young defensive coach, you've got to go out and hire the absolute best offensive guy that's out there. And that's part of the problem, I mean, with the timing of this whole thing and where we're going to end up, because it's going to get very, very tight very quickly.
Two other thoughts I have. Number one, the stuff that's come out about Josh McDaniels for sure going to the Colts and the defensive coordinator's wife and Facebook, or I don't know, all that stuff, I don't believe Josh McDaniels is 100% heading to the Colts. I think it's a total leverage play for it to come out right now that, you know, Josh is really close to the Colts, because then if Josh is close to the Colts, it'll tell the Colts, hey, time to up the money because Tennessee might call me. Or if he really wants the Tennessee job, then it's kind of a signal to Tennessee as, hey, Tennessee, I'm going to the Colts if you guys don't give me what I want. And then, you know, then Josh ultimately gets to pick between the different jobs of which job he wants. So I'm not convinced just because NFL Network says that McDaniels is going to the Colts that McDaniels is out of the mix. I don't feel that way. And then the other thing, which I find to be infinitely more important in all of this, is what's going to happen with Marcus and what will be best for Marcus. And that is where we'll go next. 615-737-1025 is the phone number. 615-737-1025. Once again, we're live at Bridgestone Arena where the Predators take on Vegas tonight. By the way, special thanks to everybody who listens to our show and everybody who listens via podcast, because yesterday was, by my count, the most downloaded day we've ever had in terms of podcasts in 24 hours for an individual show. Yesterday's show, fantastic. We love the growing support for Jared and the GM. It means everything to us, so we want to thank everybody there. Coming up next, though, what is best for Marcus? Floyd, we will ask you that question, and we'll hear what John Robinson has to say as well. 615-737-1025. Jared and the GM, live from Bridgestone Arena. It's ESPN 102.5 The Game.
This is going to be Marcus's third head coach in four pro seasons. Where does that fall on the level of your concern?
Marcus is a pretty resilient guy. He's a very mentally tough guy. He takes a lot from the standpoint of ownership and things. I have zero concern in Marcus being able to adapt and learn and do what's best to get the offense going.
That was John Robinson yesterday, which was kind of a generic answer, but I think it is true. I mean, I think Marcus is tough, and Marcus has already been through a coaching change, so it's not like something he hasn't faced before. We're broadcasting live at Bridgestone Arena today, but you heard that right there. I mean, Floyd, I know you've gone on record before in saying that coaching changes for young quarterbacks are not always a good thing. Right. And we saw when the Titans hired Ken Whisenhunt, it was kind of the end of Jake Locker's career. It, honestly, now, I don't think Jake really had a whole lot of saving, because Jake wasn't a very accurate passer, And I think we're learning with Blake Bortles, you can really only overcome that when everybody else around you is really, really good. And so, like, I don't think Jake could have been saved. I think Marcus definitely has the potential to be much better than Jake Locker ever did. But what is best for Marcus with this next coach? Is it hiring an offensive guru? Is it getting the right scheme? Is it getting an offensive coordinator that can adjust? I mean, I don't know what was wrong about the last coach for Marcus, like everybody else complains and moans and groans about, including John. So I don't know what was bad for Marcus. So I obviously don't know what's good for Marcus. So the question for you is, what's best for Marcus?
Well, I mean, anytime you can keep things similar, it's going to help a young quarterback. Now, is it going to be exact? No, it won't. But if it's close enough that he doesn't have to learn an entirely new progression, read system, all of those, you know, pass protections. It sounds silly, but play calls and what you're calling. I mean, if you go from a system where you're, like we've heard him call audibles, you go 781, 781, well, that may be a pass pattern. Well, if you go to a system now where you're going, you know, king left, double wide out, zoom, Z cross, X post, Y out, halfback check flat, well, I mean, that's going to be a problem. And so I think you would like for a lot of that to be the same if you can. Now, that being said, I don't think Marcus would have any trouble learning any of that. I really don't. But that's not the question in my mind. The question in my mind is, how do we get Marcus good? And just judging from what I saw last year, I mean, he's going to have to work on his fundamentals. He'll have this entire offseason, and he needs to work on fundamentals. He's going to have to get on the same page with the receivers, and he needs to get all those receivers and fly them to Hawaii or fly them to Eugene, Oregon, or fly them to Franklin, wherever they can all get together, and they are going to have to live together for about 4 months, throwing every pattern in the book. This is exactly the way you run it. This is the way you run it against this coverage. This is the way you run it. And be on the same page in all of that. And if they don't do those kind of things, then you're going to run into the same issues we did this year, you know, which is the receiver's running an out, I'm throwing an in. Well, guess what? That's an interception.
Well, like, what killed me with Marcus this year is, like, I hear all these people that say that Mike's system ruined Marcus, and I don't get that. Like, and maybe I'm just not smart enough to understand it, but to me, it wasn't the system as much as it was the execution. And I know people want to blame the system, but what was so bad about the system that people hated so much?
They don't. People want, they see the Rams come in here with Goff throwing the ball up and down the field, and that's what they want. That's the kind of system they want. Well, Goff is at home right now. And all of these other guys with the systems, except for Brady, all three other teams in the playoffs are doing exactly what we want to do. And that's three out of four teams in the playoffs. So in spite of what the fans think and in spite of what the fans want, at least this year, the surest way to win and to have a chance to be a world champ is to do what we're trying to do.
See, but then again, that would then argue that you don't need to change. And even, well, John's getting up there saying, oh, we need to change. And so, like, I think the fans heard what John said yesterday about the need to change and interpreted that as they need to sling the ball.
No, I don't think that's the case.
I'll tell you what I think the fans heard.
Oh, I don't, maybe. I think what he meant was, you know, we can't have a second or third year receiver in Matthews who leads the team in receptions 1 year and then falls off a cliff the next. We can't have two rookie receivers that cannot get on the field because they're running the wrong patterns, doing the wrong things, can't catch the ball, can't all of those things. I think that's where the real issue comes from. I mean, Harry Douglas, we've talked about Harry Douglas forever. I mean, that's a lost spot.
One catch this season.
A lost spot. And he was a minimum salary. If it's one catch for a rookie free agent out of northeast nowhere that is really big or really fast or really something, you say, fine, we've got another year. He's got it here next year, you know? So he's gone. Now what? You just wasted a year on a guy that's.
Although John is in charge of personnel, so that's John's fault, not Mike's fault. Although it's obvious who loved Harry Douglas.
Yeah, I don't think there's any doubt about that.
And what got, like, you know, the Harry Douglas thing was the number one of, like, I actually listed it last night when I was at home. I listed all the things I didn't like about Mike because I'm still very against firing Mike Mularkey. And I was, like, listing all the things that drove me crazy. Harry Douglas was number one on the list. Only because it made no sense. Like, it literally made no sense that they were so in love with Harry Douglas, he ended the season with one catch. And, you know, they brought him back from IR. Like, the whole IR to return, that's meant for Aaron Rodgers. Like, Aaron Rodgers breaks his collarbone in October and is able to come back in December. That's what that's made for, not for Harry Douglas. So that drove me nuts. But I'm with you. And I guess I understand the whole thing about the receivers. And the receivers, you know, they fired the receivers coach last year because the receivers couldn't get it. Then this year they bring in a new receivers coach, and the receivers that they spent a lot of money and a lot of resources on got worse. And I also think the other thing, too, with John Robinson was he kept talking about all three phases of the ball. I think he's referencing the special teams, too. John spent a lot of money on Bates, a lot of money on Trowick, and a high draft pick on Adoree Jackson to return kicks, and you got nothing out of special teams.
Nothing.
I mean, you hit the punter and jumped in the neutral zone to cost you games, or almost cost you games, more times than you made big plays on special teams. And I think because that was one of the first things John attacked in free agency, I think that really ticked John off.
Well, the three guys you bring in to virtually change the culture in special teams were maybe the three biggest problems in those two guys in Weems. I mean, if somebody was going to get a penalty out there, a silly penalty, or push or shove or get it on the sideline, it was probably Weems. And you're saying, wait a minute now. I mean, I'm all for going down there and making a tackle, you know, on kick cover, but I can probably get that guy as a free agent out of Montana, pay him minimum salary, he can do exactly the same thing.
Not run into the punter.
And not get a penalty on the sideline.
I mean, Trowick got three legitimate game-changing penalties, one against Oakland, one against Kansas City that ended up not biting them in the butt in the long run, and then one against the Patriots. Sorry, dude. And I think that really bothered John, that John spent all the money and draft picks working on special teams, and special teams was a disaster. So I think that had something to do with it, too. All right, let's go to your phone. 615-737-1025 is the phone number, 615-737-1025. Joe is going to kick us off on a snow day. Thank you for calling here live at Bridgestone Arena. Go ahead, Joe.
Hey, guys. Thanks for taking from my call. You know, I got to make a comment about this whole coaching change, and just give me a second here, but I just think it's a bad decision. I'm with you, Jared, on this. I mean, I think what do you got to complain about? I mean, we went to the division round. We went as far as our talent allowed us to go, okay? I mean, were we really expecting the Tennessee Titans to go up against the Patriots and do a showing this year after what we see through the season? I mean, that's just being naive. But they got as far as the talent could take us. And, I mean, Terry Rubinsky is a great offensive coordinator. I mean, you got to look at it. Marcus Mariota was injured. He wasn't able to work with his receivers during the offseason. Corey Davis was injured. He wasn't able to work with Marcus Mariota in the offseason. And the GM said it correctly just a minute ago. What they've got to do now is work with each other during this offseason, build that relationship, build that timing, and this upcoming next season, it will be better. They need some upgrades on the receiving line. They need some upgrades on the defense. This is very noticeable. But, I mean, come on. Mike Mularkey had this team playing together, and they understood one another. I mean, it takes time. You can't just expect a pyramid built in a couple of years. I mean,
Joe,
come on.
Joe, I honestly, and I appreciate your call, I agree with literally everything he said, except the Robisky is a great offensive coordinator. That I'm not willing to go with. But I agree. I mean, I really do agree. Like, and I don't want to rehash yesterday's show because, look, the truth is I can complain and moan and groan, but Mike Mularkey's not coming back. But I do think the Titans made a big mistake here. I think – okay, I have a theory. I know you hate when I have theories, but I have theories.
They're in the real world, they're called rumors.
I'll get to my theory next, and then we're back to the phones. 615-737-1025. Jared and the GM hanging out live at Bridgestone Arena. It's ESPN 1025, the game.
Yeah, I think anytime you make a decision that affects the team, there's always risk involved. There was risk with the trades that we made. There was risk with some of the things that we did. But in the end, you try to just do what's best for the team moving forward.
Titans general manager John Robinson, Jared and the GM live out of Bridgestone Arena. And I think, Floyd, you would agree there's a lot of risk involved in firing Mike Mularkey.
Any coach, yes, absolutely.
But it was a lot riskier to fire the guy who was just in the divisional playoff than it is to fire Ken Whisenhunt, who was 3-20 as a head coach.
Well, yeah, I mean, the risk is the same from the standpoint you still have to go out and find a good head coach someplace.
Right, but if you're 3-20, it's probably easier to find a better coach than a 3-20 coach than it is to find a guy who got you to the playoffs for the first time in a decade.
Well, yeah, but no, you're missing my point. The point is you're going out trying to find somebody that's going to lead you to the Super Bowl. So whether you fire a guy that just won 10 games or a guy that won 0 games, you're still looking for that same guy.
And that's fair. But I just, we just had a caller that called in that just thought basically that the Titans were overreacting and firing Mike Mularkey. Now, I would say that 85% of the fan base is on board with firing Mike Mularkey. I do not count myself in that 85%. I think I was very vocal yesterday about not firing Mike Mularkey. And, that was kind of yesterday's show and not today's show. But I do want to get to my one theory that I had here. And this is that Mike screwed it all up. And you're thinking, what do you mean by that? When John came here and had to keep Mike as coach, I think the number one reason the Titans were comfortable with Mike as coach was they knew he was a good guy. They knew he'd get out in the community, and they knew that, he'd kind of try to peddle the product a little bit, which they like. And honestly, Mike is probably cheaper than your average head coach. So when you're paying Ken Whisenhunt still, you're not paying Mike the type of money that it would cost if you wanted to bring a coach in who is very much in high demand. And so they figure, okay, we'll hire John Robinson. Mike will be the coach. But after a couple years, the team will stink, and then you can go fire him and go get your own coach. And I think what happened was Mike screwed that all up because he won too much. At first you'd think, well, the Titans are going to go 6-10 in that first season with Mike Mularkey, and they go 9-7. And then Mike kind of gave them an out. They were 8-4. Mike gives them an out by almost missing the playoffs, and you think, okay, if you're going to fire him, this is where you fire him. And they went and made the playoffs. So, you can't fire him right when he makes the playoffs. You got to let him coach at least through the playoffs. Then he goes and wins a playoff game. Well, now it's really hard to fire him. So then, after that press conference Mike did on Sunday, in which Mike could have said all the coaches are coming back and could have been flat out lying. We get lied to in press conferences every day. Then John goes to Mike and says, you got to do X, Y, Z. And Mike, probably taken aback, it's like, well, hold up, I don't know, I'm not, but I think in reality, I think John wanted to get rid of Mike. I just think that John, at the end of the day, didn't think Mike was a good enough coach, and I understand why he thinks that. I mean, I wrote down the list of things that I really didn't like about Mike, and I'll be honest with you, I couldn't stand Robiskie, and I couldn't stand special teams, both when Bobby April ran them for the first 4 games last year, and Steve Hoffman ever since. Both drove me insane. Mike's in-game coaching and clock management drove me crazy. And that's a lot of things that are pretty important for a coach. I'm already unhappy with his offense, his special teams, and his in-game coaching. Those are pretty big things, right?
Pretty big.
Okay. But I feel like if you're going to knock Mike on those fronts, you do have to give Mike credit for the culture that he's built here and the success that he's had. And to me, I think those two things outweigh all the negatives for at least right now. And that's, I think John thinks differently. I think the fans think differently. I think the fans think that the negatives outweighed the positives. And I think John ultimately thought that the players that he had brought to this team were better than the results that they were getting from Mike and his coaches. And that's ultimately what I think it boiled down to. And I just disagree with that opinion. Because I think it's hard to win 9 games in the NFL. And I think it's hard to get to the playoffs in the NFL. And I think it's hard to win a playoff game in the NFL. I mean, you could have waited till Mike goes 5-11, then fired him. That, okay. But that's just my take. That's just my theory that I have.
Okay.
Your thoughts on that theory?
it's so wrong on so many different levels.
What's wrong about it?
I mean, what makes you think anybody? See, this is where I don't know what sport you're thinking about when you think a GM hires a coach with the intent that, you know, we're just going to go ahead and lose for a couple of years. And then after that couple of years, I'm going to fire this coach and go get another one. Nobody in sport does that. Nobody. That never, ever happens. You don't ever bring somebody in and say, you know what, he's just going to bide time here until.
Well, Mike did. I mean, John didn't hire him.
Four years ago, 3 years from now or 4 years from now, when I can get Johnny, who's over here at the Colts, and his contract will be up, and then I'll bring him in. Nobody works like that.
But you're acting like John Robinson made the decision to hire Mike Mularkey, which I think it's well documented that he did not.
I think it's well documented that he had a very strong say in it.
In the hiring of Mike Mularkey?
You don't think he did?
God, no. No.
Okay.
I mean, it was and well documented.
Who do you think did?
I think Amy Adams Strunk wanted Mike Mularkey to be the coach.
Amy can do whatever she wants, but outside of Amy.
I ultimately think that at the end of the day, it came down, and I know that Steve Underwood liked Mike, but I think at the end of the day, it came down to John finally convinced Amy that they were better off without Mike.
No, hiring. We were talking about hiring.
No. I'm talking about at the end.
Hired?
Amy. Amy and Underwood hired Mike Mularkey.
By themselves.
John Robinson had nothing to do with the hiring of Mike Mularkey.
Oh, okay.
And that, I think, is well documented, and I think it's well believed.
Okay.
I mean, and I'm not here to knock you because I love you. It was very hard for me.
You're not knocking me.
It's very hard for me to sit there and listen to the "you don't have a clue" and "nobody knows anything" and "you guys don't know."
Not
when
nobody.
Those guys
I'm
said,
"I'm not talking
everybody
about
said
nobody."
That
I'm
Mike was
about
getting
you.
Fired, and you were the one that kept saying Mike wasn't going to get fired, and then Mike got fired.
I am not talking about everybody. I'm just talking about you. You're the one that doesn't know.
Well, I'm not making up the fact that it wasn't John that hired Mike.
A bunch of these other guys. And you know that for sure.
Everybody knows it.
Everybody.
It's common knowledge.
Common knowledge.
Yes.
Ah, okay. So.
Hey, you can play your fake news. By the way, my Twitter blew up today because I tweeted out that you said 0.0 last week. I said, like last week when you said it, I tweeted that out. My Twitter blew up today. People be like, his tweets age well, Jared.
Let me explain it to you again. Last week. All the discussion was what?
They're going to fire Mike.
Because?
Because Marcus hadn't developed.
What about? Keep going. He was going to lose a game. He was going to.
And they're going to fire him.
He was out. He was done. Right? Because
correct.
Of football.
Right.
Yeah. What did he get fired for?
I just told you my theory.
Well, I'm not talking about your theory. I'm talking about what happened. He got fired because he wouldn't change the staff. Those are two completely different things. Now, I know it's hard for you to visualize this. Two completely different things. You're talking about oranges and apples. And so, however you connect those two, I have no idea. But, I mean, you can do it. You can do whatever you want. I mean, you're a free man. But I don't know where you get. You act. I mean, if you knew how secretive things were, if you knew how little you didn't know, then you wouldn't say things like that. But you do. And you know what? I just go along with it. I mean, I smile and nod, which is fine. I mean, I have no problem with that. But I don't think you need to sell it like this is the answer. Because you really don't know.
I'm just telling you what was reported that you denied, and I agreed with you. And then what happened in the end was he got fired. And I think a lot of that goes back to if you really want to dump your wife, you'll find a way. You know, and it might have been that you don't love your wife that much anymore, but in the end you come up with, well, we just weren't very happy together, so that's why we broke up. But really it's, you know, I stopped loving her and I like somebody else. And that's what I think happened here. I think they wanted to fire him. And I don't know who's talking to the press because that's got to stop, but this was like one of the worst kept secrets for 3 weeks that they wanted to fire him as coach. And that's just what I think. Let's go to the calls. 615-737-1025. Glenn is up next here on the show. Thank you for calling. What's up, Glenn?
Yeah, hey, I just wanted to give you, you know, the way I looked at this last summer when you guys were talking about the Titans, you said that the offense was definitely ahead of the defense. It was going to be the offense who was going to have to really step up to win a lot of these games. And the way I look at it is quarterback got worse. For some reason, the offensive line got worse, which I can't understand. The receivers were terrible. The entire offense went downhill. So then they go back to Mike and say, we'll extend you, but you're going to have to pretty much clean house on the offensive side of the ball. He said, no, you're gone. That's the way life works, not just in the NFL. I'll hang up and listen to what you have to say.
Thanks for the call, Glenn. Now, I mean, I don't know if that's what happened, but it wouldn't shock me if that was what happened. My guess is they probably wanted Robiski out, Jason Michael, the quarterback coach, and Frisman Jackson, the wide receivers coach. They probably all wanted to get rid of them. I doubt that they really necessarily wanted to get rid of Russ Grimm. I mean, Russ Grimm has a history of being a good coach in the NFL. So I don't think they probably wanted to fire him, but that is most of the offensive staff. And if you were to go hire a new coordinator, like if you were to go hire Tom Clements, then whoever you would go hire, that is probably who they would want. They'd want to bring in their own coaching staff too.
And if you were somebody in charge, whatever kind of label title you want, and you were going to fix this team, what are two of the things you would for sure do?
Oh, for me?
Yes.
Get rid of Robiski?
One.
Get rid of Steve Hoffman, the special teams coach.
Two. Too.
Jason Michael, the quarterback coach.
Three. Okay. Now, that's to fix the team, right? You just fix the team.
Well, and you know what this team
but
needs,
now you come to me and say, no, I'm not going to make any of those changes. Wait a minute. Aren't we trying to fix the team? We just discussed this. I mean, we look at it. Here are the areas we need to fix. And you admit it, and we're not going to do it? Now, what choice do I have?
Got to let him go for one more year. They kept winning. They kept winning. I mean, look, I know what you say. I get that. But it's not like we're trying to fix a 5-11 team. We're trying to fix a team that just lost to the Patriots in the divisional round of the playoffs. And that's my one thing. You know, we're not trying to fix a 4-12 team. We're not trying to fix a 5-11 team. That's the difference here, in my opinion. But then again, what I think doesn't really matter anyway, so who cares? 615-737-1025. More of your phones. 615-737-1025. Plus, the lateness of the situation. The one thing that I think Mike Mularkey probably did hurt the Titans with was the fact that they are so late in this search. And how much of a factor is that? We'll get to that next. It's Jerry and the GM on ESPN 102.5 The Game.
Now, the problem is, the issue for the Titans is that they're getting into the head coaching search today. Mm-hmm. Today. So the Indianapolis Colts and the New York Giants already have done their interviews with Josh McDaniels. They've already gone down the road. And Tennessee is not allowed by law to talk to Josh McDaniels until after the conference championship game on Sunday. So they are behind the eight ball if they wanted to go. If they had not made the playoffs and had they scheduled Josh McDaniels, which I bet they would have after the season, they might have been in the thick of this. But right now, they're playing a game of catch-up.
That was Adam Schefter on ESPN. What do you make of the fact that the Titans had to wait until after the divisional round to fire the coach? And now, you know, some of these guys have already been hired. Some of the other jobs, it looks like they're going to get filled with guys who are still playing. You know, like it looks like Patricia to the Lions. It looks like Shermer to the Giants. It looks like McDaniels to the Colts. And here are the Titans, and they haven't even really started this process. Does it matter that much? Does it matter for assistant coaches? What does it mean? Because we're coming up on January 16th. The last team, I looked this up today, the last team to fire their coach after the divisional round of the playoffs, the Denver Broncos in 2015, they fired John Fox. They had Gary Kubiak hired by January 19th. So that would be 3 days from now. So what do we think of the situation the Titans find themselves in?
Well, I mean, it has to be an issue, I think, for several different reasons. I mean, because we missed out on the first bye week with the interviews of these coaches, we can't interview them until after the season's over, after the Super Bowl's over.
You don't get that second bye week?
I think you only get it if you interviewed them the first time. Now, they may change that rule. But the rule used to be if you interview him the first time in the bye week, then you can interview him the second time. If you didn't interview him the first time, then you can't interview him the second time. And if that's the case, that means they won't get to interview anybody on those two teams till after the Super Bowl. And as important, probably, is your the hiring of your staff, because you're going to end up with guys that have not been able to get a job, which, you know, isn't as bad as it necessarily sounds. But, I mean, the top one or two guys at every spot are very likely going to be gone.
Or there would be guys that aren't ready for jobs. Like, and a quarterback's coach that you worked with can be your offensive coordinator, but that doesn't mean that he has experience as an offensive coordinator.
Yeah, I mean, you're going to – or if you bring in a young coach, like the guys we're talking about, you know, interviewing this week, I mean, it's even harder because they know less people. I mean, they just don't have the – they don't know everybody in the league. And consequently, they end up having to interview and want to hire guys that they know. Well, if you only know a third of the league and that third of the league is hired, now what do? You know, now you're out knocking on doors and bringing guys in that you really don't know a great deal about. So, I mean, it's a concern, I think. I mean, it's an issue. I mean, it's the same with every team that gets in the same situation. But and especially if that rule stays the same and you can't interview any of the guys in the Super Bowl until after the Super Bowl, I mean, now you're getting ready for the combine and you don't have a staff yet.
Go Jags. Go Jags and go Vikings, I guess, because they're not going to hire Pat Shurmur. So, although the one thing, you know, would Shurmur not want to go to the Giants and rather come here, because Marcus is here, Junior is here playing at Vandy.
Oh, yeah.
And, I mean, quite frankly, if I was a head coach, I'd rather be the head coach of the Titans and be the head coach of a team in New York. I just don't want to deal with – I mean, if the worst thing you have to deal with is Jared and the GM, like, you know, as opposed to New York, I would take that. Let's get back to the calls. Adam is up next on Jared and the GM. We're live at Bridgestone Arena. Preds in Vegas tonight. What's up, Adam?
Hey, Jared. All right, so I'm going to piggyback off of what I said yesterday because I'm looking more into it. And, you know, I've never been further away from what Floyd said. And I think, you know, if you look at that press conference after the Kansas City game, Mike clearly, like, he kept talking about his family. He kept talking. He said that just didn't sit well with him. He would not come out and say that and then turn around and they say, fire your coordinator. And he goes, no, I quit. He was worried about his family. Like, he liked it here. He loved it here. There's no way he quits that job. They parted with him just like it's the same thing if you look at how shady it was when they fired Fisher and the same way they did Munchak. They did not want either of those coaches, but they made it seem like they were breaking up instead of it being that this guy's fired. So they're just really bad at doing that. If this is a relationship, they'd be that person that's really bad at breaking up with somebody. And you know what? It's just a reputation they have. I don't think it was fair to Mike. At the same time, you look at it, it's like clearly – what happened. I think they wanted McDaniels. They're not going to get McDaniels. But you could tell Mike would not dump his job for a coordinator after he said that press conference.
Thank you for the call, Adam. I mean, I don't know what to believe anymore. Either he wasn't going to get rid of the coaches or he wasn't going to get rid of the coaches, or I don't know what I believe anymore. I just don't. Except that I believe, and you can disagree with me, I believe John did not want Mike. At the end of the day, I think John just didn't think that Mike was a good enough coach. And that's okay. I mean, everybody's entitled to their own opinions. That's just what I believe. So, I mean, I know you don't believe that. I don't know what you do believe, but...
I believe what everybody's saying. I mean, it seems pretty simple to me.
I think there's more there. I think it's like Adam said there. He loves it here, loves this team. His last opportunity. Is he really going to die on the hill for Terry Robiskie? I mean, that's what I'm just not convinced about. 615-737-1025. I thought we'd get to some more calls there, but we will get to them next. Plus, here on a snow day on Jared and the GM, are we sure that a New England guy is the way to go? You've already got one New England guy. Do you really want a New England guy? We'll get into that next on Jared and the GM, live from Bridgestone Arena. It's ESPN 102.5 The Game.